The Eagle's Shadow by James Branch Cabell. 22.
Well, Mr. Woods observed, lengthening the word somewhat, in the intimate half-light of the summer house, he loomed prodigiously big. He was gazing downward in careful consideration of three fat tortoiseshell pins and a surprising quantity of gold hair, which was practically all that he could see of Miss Hugonin's person, for that lovely lady had suddenly become a limp mass of abashed violet ruffles, and had discovered new and irresistible attractions in the mosaics about her feet. Billy's arms were crossed on his breast, and his right hand caressed his chin meditatively. By and by, "I wonder now," he reflected aloud, "if you can give me any reason, any possible reason, why you shouldn't be locked up in the nearest sanatorium."
"You needn't be rude, you know," a voice observed from the neighborhood of the ruffles, "because there isn't anything you can do about it."
Mr. Woods ventured a series of inarticulate observations.
"But why?" he concluded desperately. "But why, Peggy? In heaven's name, what's the meaning of all this?"
She looked up. Billy was aware of two large blue stars. His heart leapt, and then he recalled a pair of gray-green eyes that had regarded him in much the same fashion not long ago, and he groaned.
"I was unfair to you last night," she said, and the ring of her odd, deep voice and the richness and sweetness of it moved him to faint longing, to a sick heart hunger. It was tremulous, too, and very tender.
"Yes, I was unutterably unfair, Billy. You asked me to marry you when you thought I was a beggar, and Uncle Fred ought to have left you the money. It was on account of me that he didn't, you know. I really owed it to you. And after the way I talked to you, so long as I had the money, and anyhow, it's very disagreeable and eccentric and horrid of you to object to being rich," Margaret concluded, somewhat incoherently. She had not thought it would be like this. He seemed so stern.
"But isn't that exactly like her?" Mr. Woods was demanding of his soul.
"She thinks she has been unfair to me. To me, whom she doesn't care a button for, mind you. So she hands over a fortune to make up for it, simply because that's the first means that comes to hand. Now, isn't that perfectly unreasonable and fantastic and magnificent and incredible? In short, isn't that Peggy all over? Why, God bless her, her heart's bigger than a barn door. Oh, it's no wonder what that fellow Mr. Canaston was grinning just now when he sent me to her. He can afford to grin." Aloud, he stated, "You're an angel, Peggy. That's what you are. I've always suspected it, and I'm glad to know it now for a fact. But in this prosaic world, not even angels are allowed to burn up wills for recreation. Why, bless my soul, child, you... Why, there's no telling what trouble you might have gotten into." Miss Hugonin pouted.
"You needn't be such a grandfather," she suggested helpfully.
"But it's a serious business," he insisted. At this point, Billy began to object to her pouting as distracting one's mind from the subject under discussion.
"It's what?" she pouted, even more rebelliously.
"Crimson," said Mr. Woods, considering. "Oh, the very deepest, darkest crimson, such as you can't get in tubes. It's a color was never mixed on any palette.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I think you ought to," said Margaret primly. Nevertheless, she had brightened considerably.
"Of course," Mr. Woods continued with a fine color, "I can't take the money. That's absurd."
"Is it?" she queried idly.
"Now I wonder how you're going to help yourself."
"Simplest in the world," he assured her. "You see this match, don't you, Peggy? Well, now you're going to give me that paper I see in that bag thing at your waist, and I'm going to burn it till it's all nice, soft, feathery ashes that can't ever be probated. And then the first will, which is practically the same as the last, will be allowed to stand. And I'll tell your father all about the affair because he ought to know, and you'll have to settle with those colleges. And in that way," Mr. Woods submitted, "Uncle Fred's last wishes will be carried out just as he expressed them, and there needn't be any trouble, none at all. So give me the will, Peggy,
It is curious what a trivial matter love makes of felony. Margaret's heart sank. However, yes, said she encouragingly, and what do you intend doing afterward? I shall probably live abroad, said Billy. Cheaper, you know. And here, he thought, was an excellent, an undreamed-of opportunity to inform her of his engagement. He had much better tell her now and have done. Mr. Woods opened his mouth and looked at Margaret and closed it. Again she was pouting in a fashion that distracted one's mind. That would be most unattractive, said Miss Hugonin calmly. You're very stupid, Billy, to think of living abroad. Billy, I think you're almost as stupid as I am. I've been very stupid, Billy. I thought I liked Mr. Canaston. I don't, Billy, not that way. I've just told him so. I'm not engaged to anybody now, Billy. But wasn't it stupid of me to make such a mistake, Billy? That was a very interesting mosaic there in the summer house. I don't understand, said Mr. Woods. His voice shook, and his hands lifted a little toward her and trembled. Poor Billy dared not understand. Her eyes downcast, her foot tapping the floor gently, Margaret was all one blush. She, too, was trembling a little, and she was a little afraid and quite unutterably happy, and outwardly she was very much the tiny lady of Oberon's court, very much the coquette quintessentialized. It is pitiable that our proud Margaret should come to such a pass. Ah, the men that you have flouted and scorned and bedeviled and mocked at, Margaret! Could they see you now, I think the basest of them could not but pity and worship you. This man is bound in honor to another woman. Yet a little, and his lips will open, very dry parched lips they are now, and he will tell you, and your pride will drive you mad, and your heart come near to breaking. Don't you understand? Oh, you silly Billy! She was peeping at him meltingly from under her lashes. I'm imagining vain things, said Mr. Woods. Peggy, I think I must be going mad. He stared hungrily at the pink, startled face that lifted toward his. Ah, no, it could not be possible. This thing he had imagined for a moment, he had misunderstood. And now, just for a little, thought poor Billy, let my eyes drink in those dear felicities of color and curve, and meet just for a little the splendor of those eyes that have the April in them, and rest just for a little upon that sanguine, close-grained, petulant mouth. And then I will tell her, and then I think that I must die. Peggy, he began in a flattish voice. They have evidently gone, said the voice of Mr. Canaston. Yes, those beautiful, happy young people have foolishly deserted the very prettiest spot in the gardens. Let us sit here, Kathleen. But I'm not an eavesdropper, Mr. Woods protested half angrily. I fear Margaret was not properly impressed. Please, Billy, she pleaded in a shrill whisper. Please, let's listen. He's going to propose to her now, and you've no idea how funny he is when he proposes. Oh, don't be so pokey, Billy. Do let's listen. But Mr. Woods had risen with a strange celerity and was about to leave the summer house. Margaret pouted. Mrs. Saumarez and Mr. Canaston were seated not 20 feet from the summer house, on the bench which Miss Hugonin had just left, and when that unprincipled young woman finally rose to her feet, it must be confessed that it was with a toss of the head, and with the reflection that while to listen wasn't honorable, it would at least be very amusing. I grieve to admit it, but with Billy's scruples she hadn't the slightest sympathy. Then Canaston cried suddenly, "Why, you're mad, Kathleen! Woods wants to marry you? Why, he's heels over head in love with Miss Hugonin!" Miss Hugonin turned to Mr. Woods with a little intake of the breath. No, I shall not attempt to tell you what Billy saw in her countenance. Timanthes like, I draped before it the vines of the summer house. For a brief space, I think we had best betake ourselves outside, leaving Margaret in a very pitiable state of anger and shame and humiliation and heartbreak, leaving poor Billy with a heart that ached, seeing the horror of him in her face.